Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm learning about myths and legends from around the world and seeing how we can use them, and religion and mythology in general, in our fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we're continuing our series on Tengrism, the religious tradition that existed for much of the Middle Ages throughout Central Asia. In the early episodes of this series, we established the basics of the Tengrist cosmology, and then we talked a little bit about Tengri himself, the god of the sky and the supreme deity in the Tengrist pantheon. In our last episode, we discussed a few other examples of deities from Tengrism, and today we're going to do a little bit more of that. Two quick notes before we start. One is about programming, and one is about content. So, the programming one is simple. I am traveling this coming weekend. So I don't really know what the publication schedule is going to look like. I'm going to get episodes out whenever I can. So the right number of episodes on the right topics should come out over the next few weeks, but they may come out at unaccustomed times. So it shouldn't be more than a day or two in any direction, but just a heads up. Second, our content disclaimer. Like last time, I want to stress that there's probably no unified centralized Tengrism, and therefore there's no unified centralized version of this mythology. And I know I always say that, and it's always true, but it's especially true of Tengrism. We're talking about, like, the first written reference that we had to Tengri was from, like, 200 BC or something like that, and doubtless refers to a tradition that existed before that reference was written. And then we have examples of writing about Tengrism, you know, well up into the Middle Ages, and for that matter, a Tengrist revival that exists today. So we've got a period of well over 1,000 years to cover. And in addition, we have a tradition that goes, and sources that go from East Asia all the way into Asia Minor, all the way, you know, as far as, like, Hungary. So there is a lot of diversity within that. So think of all the, like, complexity and contradiction in something like Greek mythology, and then think about the scale of this region and the length of time that we're talking about. And then we don't have, or at least I don't have, accessible to me a lot of texts. But there's a lot of stuff about Tengrism that's in Turkish, or it's in Russian, or I guess it's just in a source that I don't have available to me. It's not something that's really been written about in a way that's as accessible as some of the other religions that we've talked about. You know, much less of its literature has survived, and much less of that is available in translation. So just please take everything I say with a grain of salt. I always say I'm not an expert on these mythologies, but I'm very much not an expert on Tengrism. Anyway, with that out of the way, here are some of the other figures that I wanted to talk about today that appear in various Tengrist myths. We're actually really gonna keep coming back to some of these themes. So let's start with Ulgen. Ulgen is sometimes the same deity as Tengri. Sometimes he is a descendant of Tengri, like he's Tengri's grandson. You may sometimes see him called Bey Ulgen or Bai Ulgen. His name comes from a word that means magnificent. Ulgen means magnificent, and then, like, Beolgan means, like, rich and magnificent. He lives in a golden palace at the highest level of the sky, or a very high level of the sky anyway, and he defends humanity against the machinations of Erlik, the trickster and the lord of the underworld, who we discussed in the previous episode. I mentioned his children because Erlik has comparable children, the dark boys. These are the white boys. There are 7 of them, and they are the gods of purity, horses, birds, nature, prosperity, confidence, and blessing, which is a sort of consistently goody-two-shoes set of things to be gods of, whereas Erlik's kids are a little more mixed. Most of them are the gods of bad things, but actually some of them seem to be all right. Like, I want to say one of them's the god of courage. His 9 daughters are not named or enumerated, and they have kind of like a role in shamanism, is my understanding. And shamans are able to ascend to the heavens on certain days and using certain practices, and there they are able to communicate at least with the servants of Ulgen. He seems to have various spirits or lesser deities that serve him and help him keep the world running smoothly, which is kind of his job. I mentioned that there are some versions of the story in which Ulgen is the grandson of Tengri. In those cases, his father is a character named Karahan or Karakhan or Kyra, a name that might mean merciful king, if it's Kyra Khan, or if it's Karahan, it could mean black king or king of the land. All of those names are pretty good. You remember I told that story about Tengri as a goose flying across, like skimming along above the water and being told to create the world. There is also a version of that story in which that's Karahan, although it may be that I've just misunderstood it, and it's always Karahan, who's just sometimes called Tengri Karahan, which just means the god Karahan, right? Tengri can mean both god and a god. So it's sometimes used for a deity, just like in a way that describes them, so the sea god, or the god of time, or whatever. One of the things that gives me pause is that a lot of the works that I see cited when talking about Tengrism are older works. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you were asking me to read about Norse mythology and the whole reading list was just sources that were written in the 70s, I would be a little cautious because some of that research is today seen as a little bit outdated. I think you could probably walk into a bookshop today. Maybe it would have to be a used bookshop, I don't know, but I think it would not be hard to find yourself a copy of Hilda Ellis Davison's book, Gods and Myths of Northern Europe. And while that book is extremely interesting reading and might be a very good gaming source, I don't think that it is, you know, exactly considered the last word in thought about Norse myth and Norse religion today. Bad scholarship can make for good gaming, but it can sometimes be a hassle that this stuff is the most easily accessible, particularly since, like, older writing about shamanism has a tendency to try and search for these universal experiences. Because there was a tendency to view shamanism as something that was not cultural, but, like, psychological, that said something about, you know, universal mental processes, or where there was believed to be a, not uniform, but like that there was a lot of commonality in the way that religious practices developed in different cultures. Again, I think those are views that are not exactly as widely held anymore. Anyway, it's also just the case that this is one of those instances where gaming demands concrete answers, but that is not how the actual thing that is being observed works. My impulse here would be to interpret Ulagan, Karahan, and Tengri as like three different aspects or emanations of the same god. So we'll just call them all Tengri, but then like Tengri himself is the sort of supreme expression of the universe, like this fundamental cosmic principle. And then Karahan is like the creative energy of that principle and is responsible for creating the world. And then Ulagan is the sort of maintainer of the world and protector and provider and is, you know, maybe more kind of like down in the trenches. Although, I mean, he still lives in, you know, heaven. But Tengri is the eternal heaven above. And then when you have to say, well, okay, but what about all these stories in which Genghis Khan gets direct attention from Tengri, which you're sort of suggesting shouldn't happen? Well, that's just one of the ways in which you know how important Genghis Khan is. So one deity whose name I'm not sure how to pronounce, because it seems to be pronounced in a bunch of different ways, which again makes sense, is Ai-Ata or Ai-Dede. And he is the moon god. He's married to the sun goddess whose name is Gun-Ana, sun mother. So Ai-Ata, father moon, or, you know, moon father, Gun-Ana, sun mother. But he's also called Ai-Dede, grandfather moon. And I kind of get the impression that in modern sort of popular media, like especially in Turkey, he is kind of like a beloved folktale character rather than a medieval Tengrist deity. You know, like he's Grandpa Moon. There seem to be a lot of like cartoons and things about this like moon with spectacles and a mustache that is like Grandfather Moon. But then there are also these traditions about how, you know, he lives in a particular part of heaven and he's this figure of supernatural power. So there seem to be some different versions of the tradition there. And this, I guess, you know, we could think of him as being euhemerized. So as a culture where the moon god had once been really important, you know, converted to Islam, he nonetheless stayed around as a fun fairy tale character who nobody literally believed in. It's interesting how that survives. You can actually see this. I keep coming back to Norse mythology today. I must have it on the brain. But you see this in discussions of pagan magical and religious beliefs in things like the Eddas. So there's a note in a manuscript of one of the stories about Helgi Hundingsbane, I think, which says, you know, oh, some people believe that these people were those people reborn. That's something that people used to think happened. Of course, nobody believes that nowadays. It's just a story. And I think the idea of, I mean, I don't know how much real connection there is between I, Dede, the lovable moon grandpa, and I, Ata, the Tengris moon god, but I like the idea of both of them. And I think that there's something to be said for having this kind of feature in a campaign. You could have the characters arrive in a region and be told lots of, you know, fun stories about the silly old moon man. But then later, as you explore the dungeon, you find the icons of the previous moon god and realize that this is, you know, a real god whose worship has just kind of gone out of favor. But having said that, there's another version of the Tengris pantheon which features the pairing reversed, right? The sun is a male deity and the moon is the goddess, a mysterious figure who is both loved for her beauty and feared because nighttime is a dangerous time, right? Night is when witches and evil spirits are out and about. This connection of the moon to like the cycles of the natural world, to fertility, I mean, that's all something that we see in other faiths, but I also like the idea of, you know, a dual night goddess, which is something that's in my D&D game. The goddess of night is a figure both like who's sacred to thieves and who's kind of feared because of all the dangerous things that can happen at night, but also like a goddess of lovers and a goddess of mystical inspiration, right, of dreaming. Anyway, one feature of Gunana, or of the masculine sun deity in this other version of the story, is the idea of sunbeams. I really like it. The sun is thought of, I mean, correctly, I guess, as the source of energy and life. And in some myths, the rays of the sun are part of Tengri's creation of the world, meaning that the sun is, you know, involved in the creation story. But in others, or in those ones and in others, they are connections between the souls of individuals and heaven. So they're a thing that comes down from heaven, but that's like a string that connects the spiritual part of you, the immortal part of you, to the sky, which is the home of the gods. This is quite interesting from the perspective of playing fantasy adventure games, I think, because this seems to be a culture that's very into being in the open air. Not that they can't live in cities or, you know, in yurts and garrets and stuff, but they're definitely like, I don't want to generalize, and obviously I know that Tengrism is not just something that you get in Mongolia, but this sky god definitely sounds like an appropriate deity for that kind of like big sky country. So if sunlight is how you connect to heaven, or as we'll see next time, that you can travel through the realm of the gods by rituals that include metaphors of traveling upward. So if heaven is up and heaven is sky and sun, then what does going underground mean? Are you cut off from the presence of the gods? The metaphor that going underground is sort of dark and dangerous is, you know, that's a commonplace one. I wonder if you could do something with the subterranean kind of towns of prehistoric Anatolia. You know, it's an area that would later have Turkic people move into it, but not until after they had converted to Islam. But the Tengris cosmology does include an underworld, Tamag, and it is ruled over, as we have mentioned before, by Erlik Khan. I have not found really great descriptions of Tamag. It just seems to be a place of fiery punishment for sinners, and maybe that's the Tengris thing, or maybe I'm reading sources about that underworld that are written by Muslims and by Christians, and so their sense of what the underworld is supposed to look like is already projected on there. I'm not sure how much that's true here. Maybe that is just kind of what the underworld, the afterlife, is like in Tengrism. There is a suggestion that once you have been in Tamag long enough, you get moved to one of the various levels of heaven, like quite one of the quite low ones, I think. And that's interesting to me, you know, that sort of purgatory-like concept, but also it reminded me as I was thinking about this that in this cosmology, heaven is divided into these layers, that you have different layers and different people can reach different levels, sort of, I think I mentioned this previously with the idea that that might be like where spell levels come from and like shamanism, you know, druids are casting different levels of spell based on what level of heaven they're able to achieve. We might say the same thing the other way around, right? If heaven is organized in this way, then why might it not also be the case that the underworld is organized in this way? And so, you know, we can conceptualize it as divided into these layers, with Erlik being at the bottom, just as Erlik's good counterpart, Ulgin, is at the top. But we actually know that there are levels even above Ulgen, right? So what might there be below Erlik? Erlik's the closest thing to a devil that this cosmology has, again, in some versions. But his corresponding number on the other side isn't the top of the pole. And, of course, there are some depictions of the kind of celestial hierarchy that place Erlik as one of Tengri's, you know, subordinates, but on a level with Ulgen. So the idea being, I guess, that Tengri, the cosmos, has both good and evil under him, which sort of makes sense. Or maybe you just keep going down and that's where the Negatengri is. But I do like the idea that, you know, the idea that dungeon levels were a thing is something that has kind of fallen out of modern D&D, but was very much a feature of early versions of the game, to the point where games that are based on early D&D, so Tunnels and Trolls, for instance, also encoded that idea of dungeon levels, maybe even past the point where D&D had given it up. So I like the idea that the going down through different levels of a dungeon is symbolically important for people who believe in that organization of heaven. I think that's a lot of fun. There are other deities in the Tengri's pantheon. A few of them seem to exist outside of a relatively small number of references, or at least that I can find. So, for example, there's a deity of time, Ud Tengri, who I believe is only mentioned in the Orkhon inscriptions, and it's one of those things where people don't know if that's meant to be like Gok Tengri, but just with a different sort of honorific, or is it meant to be another deity? That is my understanding. I don't know very much about Ud Tengri. But anyway, the point is, I don't think in our next episode we're going to look much at other deities. I think we kind of hit the big ones. Instead, we're going to look at a system of beliefs and ritual practices that is often associated with Tengriism, even if it isn't necessarily the same thing. Kind of comes out of the same cultural background, and that is shamanism. So we're going to talk about connecting shamanism to Tengriism. And obviously, I'm not going to cover everything there is about shamanism in Central Asia in 20 minutes, but we'll take a look at some of the ideas that we can learn from it for game use. So I hope that you will join me then for Patron Deities, a show by deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.